This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
The Medrash at the beginning of the Sidra, the well-known Medrash says, The Torah says, I was the building material for the Ribbono Shel Olam, the tools which he used to build the world. It's normal that when a king, when a human being builds a structure, a building, a palace, he doesn't just out of his mind start putting things together and putting up structures. He consults an engineer, an architect who draws up plans. And the Uman, the artisan, doesn't do it on his own. He's got plans and notebooks and instructions. There are all sorts of diagrams and plans that have to go with it. He's got to know exactly where to put the different walls and the different parts of the structure. So the Ribbono Shel Olam also used the Torah as the blueprint for the creation of the world. He didn't just say, let's make a world and put things together. He looked in the Torah, so to say, and created the world in accordance with the blueprint of the plans laid out in the Torah. Batorah Omer, on the Torah itself, says, Bereshis Bara Elokim. Hashem created the world. You can say, you can translate that in the beginning, or you can translate that with the beginning. Bereshis, using Reshis, using the beginning, he made the world. And what's the beginning? Vein Reshis Ela Torah. The beginning is Torah. So using the Torah, God made the world. How did he do it? If we look in the Torah, there are no plans for building worlds there. But on its simplest level, the Ribbono Shel Olam took the Torah, which stands on its own as an absolute, and created the world to be able to give expression to every concept in the Torah. That there should be nothing in the Torah which cannot be expressed physically in the world. He created a structure which is called the Olam, in order to, through the Olam and in the Olam, to be able to give expression to every concept in the Torah. That everything should find its expression there. So there is a perfect alignment between the world which the Ribbono Shel Olam created and the Ribbono Shel Olam's Torah. The one expresses the other, the one is a reflection of the other. The world is a physical reflection of the concepts of the Torah right throughout. There's a well-known chinuch which says, Be'ato b'ni bino v'shimo zois v'hateyoznecho shema alamedecho lohoyu b'toyru mitzvis. The chinuch introduces his statement in mitzvah tes zayin, the mitzvah of not breaking a bone in the Korban Pesach, with the introduction, listen my son, carefully apply your ear and apply your mind, and I will teach you to be successful in toyru and mitzvis. So obviously what's going to come is a very precious formula. Something that can enable one to do things right. Da, no. Ki ha'odom nif'al kethi pu'uloisov. V'liboi v'chol machshavoisov tomid achar ma'isov shehu oisek bohem. Toi v'imra. A principle which is contrary to that which would normally be assumed. Normally we say that a man's actions express his feelings and express his beliefs. The chinuch holds that it's far more important to know the corollary of that principle. And that is that a man operates and is worked upon by means of his actions. And his mind, his feelings and all his thoughts are always a step behind his actions. A man's thoughts and his feelings follow his actions. His actions don't express his thoughts and feelings. He can decide to act even if he doesn't feel like it. He can decide to do things which don't come naturally. But those actions will in turn affect his internal feelings. V'afilu rosho gomer bilvovo v'chol yetzer machshavos libo rak ra kol hayom. And even an absolute rosho, a wicked man, in his heart and in his mind, and he thinks of only wicked things. Im yare ruchoi If he applies himself and continuously works on the actions of Torah and mitzvahs, he does them. Even if it's not for the right reasons, immediately there's an internal change. There's a shift inside him towards virtue. And eventually, even though he started doing it for the wrong reasons, the right reasons developed. And with the power of his deeds, he will eventually kill the force of the Yetzer Hara which has been driving him up till now. For after the actions, the hearts are drawn, the hearts are attracted. One's feelings follow one's actions, not the other way around. That being the case, we can assume if the world is a perfect expression of the Torah of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and the world is the place where we have to be active, the world is the place where we act, it's the only place that we can act. We can assume that the actions which the Ribbono Shel Olam requires us to play, to act out in this world, will all be actions which will strengthen the feelings and the thoughts and the beliefs which the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to have in his Torah. There will be a perfect matching up, a perfect alignment between the actions we need to do here and between the thoughts and the feelings that we need to have inside us. That this is the place to act, and by acting we will develop the right thoughts and the right feelings. And normally that principle works very well. But there are two problem areas. One area we spoke about some months ago, and the other area we spoke about during Sukkot, where man finds himself in a contradictory and an anomalous situation. The first area is the area of bitochen. Bitochen requires that we develop within us a feeling of trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam, where we know that there is such a thing as Hashgacha Pratis, that the Ribbono Shel Olam watches over each individual and cares for each individual, where we know that everything that happens to us is with the Ribbono Shel Olam sanction and in accordance with his desire, and we know that we have no real control, that the Ribbono Shel Olam is in absolute control of every detail of our lives. That's the feeling we've got to have. What about the actions? What are the actions which engender this feeling of total reliance on the Ribbono Shel Olam? Let us think. If we were designing actions, what would we design? What action? I want to teach you that you can rely on the Ribbono Shel Olam. So one such action would be, do you remember those funny people in Australia when they trekked across the deserts in Australia and didn't take any food? Some goyim. And they said, they trust in God. They're going to trek along and they'll manage. And they took no food and they took no water and they didn't take any change of clothes and they started walking. That's the kind of thing one would expect people to do if they want to develop bitochen. So you go with nothing and you manage and you survive. One day goes by and 2 days go by and 3 days and you survive, you manage. Somebody brings you some food, somebody lends you some money or gives you some money, somebody brings you a change of clothes miraculously as you go along. And so too, we, in order to engender within us those feelings of bitochen, we should all be required by halacha. It should be an issue to work, to make any efforts to earn a living should be forbidden. We should be required to sit in yeshivas and in kollel by absolute halacha. Every Jew should be required to learn yomim v'layla, literally, day and night. When we are ill, we should be prohibited from going to doctors. We should be prohibited from doing anything for our own well-being. And then we will see very quickly that we'll develop bitochen. We will see that somehow we survive, we manage. But that's not the halacha. For some people, for certain yechidim, that's a recommended course of action. But that's not the halacha. That's not what the halacha requires for the bulk of people. For the majority of people, what the halacha requires is that we have to do everything which is normally required in order to look after ourselves. So we have to work for a panosa. And if we decide to take the day off, we mustn't expect the panosa to come somehow. And if we say, well, you know, it's a big mitzvah to sit and learn, so we'll sit and learn today instead of working. And then we'll be surprised, phone up the office just before closing, and say, how many orders came in today? And what do you mean, how many orders? Nothing came in today. Nobody was working today. What happened? What did the Ribbono Shel Olam do?
we're not expected to expect that by sitting at home things will happen. If we're ill and we don't go to the doctor, we can expect things are going to take a turn for the worse. We are required to take steps throughout our lives which counter the concept of bitochen. The way the halacha requires us to live in the area of bitochen is contrary to the feeling of bitochen which we have to develop inside ourselves. Remember this idea I said to you in the name of Reb Chatzkel Levenstein, that that makes the development, development of the midah, of the characteristic of emunah and bitochen, extremely difficult, if not impossible, to really develop in full. Because our daily actions engender within us, according to this principle of the chinuch, our daily actions make us feel a lack of hashgacha. We act it out as if God isn't around. That's the strange thing. We have to live as if the Ribbono Shel Olam isn't caring for us, and we have to know that He is caring for us. We have to go to work, and we have to do the effort, and when it's successful, we've got to say, ah, that wasn't really our success. But tomorrow we've got to try again. So we've got to constantly work doing things as though God's not around, and we have to know that that's not true. He is around. So we're living in a completely contradictory environment, in a situation where our actions and our beliefs are contradicting one another. And that creates an enormous religious and emotional difficulty. How does one live like that? The other area we learned was over Sukkot, where we learned that really we have to live also in a very dichotomous situation. The Medrash said in Koheles, why is the world called Olam? This world which Hashem created, why is it called Olam? What does the word Olam mean? It says the Medrash, Ilulei she'elim HaKadosh Baruch Hu mibnei Adam yoim hamiso, loy hoyo Adam b'nei bayis v'lo hoyo notei akerim. If God would not have hidden from us, and the word Olam comes from the word He'elim, which means to hide. Had God not hidden from us the fact that we are not eternal, then nobody would really get off their chairs and do anything. Why not? Really, we know intellectually that we're not here forever. We know that we have a limited lifespan. But we don't live that way. We live as if we're here forever. And we discussed that in our Jehovah Sukkot from various different angles and various different aspects. That the Sukkot itself is something that we know is there only for 7 days. After 7 days, it gets packed away. Yet how do we live in the Sukkot? We don't live as if we're only there for 7 days. We don't say, only for 7 days, no point in taking the furniture out, we'll just take some casual furniture out. So only there for 7 days, it's not worth it to make the Sukkot look beautiful. No, the din is all one's beautiful kalim and all one's beautiful hangings, one should take out one's best, the best of what one has, and move into the Sukkah Kain Diras Keva, as if one's there for good. So your knowledge, your mind says, I know I'm here for 7 days, but your actions belie that knowledge. The way you're living is not as if you know you're only there for 7 days. You're living as if you're there forever. And the Medrash in Koheleth says that's the whole of life. We know we're not here forever, yet we operate with long-term investments, long-term strategies, that are going to, we're thinking far ahead of our own lifespans. And the Medrash gave that beautiful story of the old man who was seen by the emperor when the emperor was on the way to war planting fig trees. It wasn't the time for planting fig trees, it was a time for preparing for destruction, not preparing for renewal. And an elderly man, and this war is probably going to go on for years, and he says, what are you doing? And he says, I've got a plant, I must plant. If I will be zoiche, I'll eat. If not, I won't be eat. You remember the story, and the war is over, and he takes the king from his figs, and so on. The Medrash brings that to show that it is a requirement of the Ribbono Shel Olam, of the way the world operates, that we live as if we're here forever. But that must inculcate into us a belief in our own eternity, according to the principle of the Chinuch, that achar ha-maisim nimshochim ha-levoves, that the heart, the mind, follows the actions. So if we act as if we're eternal, surely we're going to start believing it, and we do start believing it.
True.
That's another example of the situation where the Torah requires of us to live in a way which is contrary to the way we're thinking. That we're thinking along one plane, and our actions are going along a different plane. And they don't really tie up properly.
Those are two examples of this complex area. But we need to know that that isn't the way it was meant to be.
It's true, that's the way it is. But we weren't meant to be in that state of tension. Let's take those two examples. The first example, we have to go out and earn a living. We have to act as if God's not at home, but we have to know He is at home. And that's throughout our lives are like that. The example that I gave also during that shiur, an important example, is the doctor who's working in the intensive care room. If for one moment he takes his mind off his patient and says to himself, even for a fraction of a second, it doesn't matter that Ribbono Shel Olam's in control here, what am I? I'm nothing. He can be guilty of murder. Because in that moment he can forget something, he can miss something which he should have noticed. He's got to act in that intensive care room as if there's no God. The Ribbono Shel Olam has made him responsible. You're there to do it all. And yet, when the day is over and he goes home, he's not to think, I saved six lives today. He's to think that Ribbono Shel Olam saved six lives today. And I was fortunate enough to be used by God as his shaliach. I was the messenger. But while he's busy there, he can't afford to think like that, if that's going to introduce a moment of laxity in his attitude. But how did it used to be? In Gan Eden, when the Ribbono Shel Olam puts Adam HaRishon in Gan Eden,
Vayanicheu beGan Eden, he places man in Gan Eden, La'ovdo u'la'shomra. A strange phrase, literally it means to work the garden and to care for it. But it's in the feminine, to work for her and to care for her, which the Targum Yonason, on the basis of the Chazal, translates, Hashem put Odom in Gan Eden, le'mehevei pelach v'oraiso, u'leminter pekudoho.
He put him, what does la'ovdo mean? Avoidus Hashem, it's avoidus ha'toiro. That's why it's in the feminine. He put Adam in the Garden of Eden because the Garden of Eden was designed as the perfect place to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam, to serve the Torah, and to keep the mitzvahs. That's what it was designed for, and that was his function there. He did not have to look after the garden. He did not have to work the garden. He didn't have to water it. He didn't have to plow it. He didn't have to do anything. That all came later. So this, that one has to work against one's beliefs. The belief is the Ribbono Shel Olam is in charge. The way we have to act is as if he isn't in charge. That was only after Adam's sin. Before the chet, there was perfect harmony between the way he had to live and the way he had to believe. He lived quietly, without worrying about parnosa, without worrying about anything. The garden was taken care of. All he had to do was learn Torah and keep the mitzvahs. That's what he had to do. So this is a post-chet problem that we've created. And we begin to realize the urgency, the personal urgency, in rectifying the chet of Adam HaRishon. We always talk about it. There was the world, Hashem created the world, Gan Eden, Adam and Chavo, beautiful, wonderful, came the chet, a terrible downfall, the world dropped, and our avoda is to fix it again. But it's always worried me a little bit. Do we really want to fix it again? Would we really enjoy that? That situation, sitting in Gan Eden with nothing to do but to learn Torah and keep the mitzvahs. And those of us who've got an opportunity to do it here, how often do we take that opportunity? So do we really want that? Are we really motivated to fix it? Do we see it as a repair, or do we see it as a bit of a retrogression in a sense? Go back to Gan Eden and sit and learn Torah. How many Jews today, if it's true that there are 12 million Jews today, how many of those 12 million would be interested in the job of fixing the world, getting it back to what it was nearly 5,800 years ago? How many Jews would be interested in going back to that state of primitiveness, as they would call it? We don't really want it. What is the personal? How can we make ourselves feel the need personally to do it because we're in a terrible state ourselves? And here we see a clear example. That we're in such a complex situation, we have created such a tension for ourselves which cannot be resolved unless we get back to the way it was. And an example of such a tension? this need to believe in the Hashgacha Pratis and the Ribbono Shel Olam's individual care of each person, and to act as if he's not, which creates enormous pressure and enormous tensions on the way we live and on the way we operate. So much wrong is results from that tension which is created by this anomalous situation. And we have to work to get back to a situation where the two operate parallelly, where what we're doing is 100% reflective of what we're meant to believe. And that removes all these negative tensions. The other example, of course, is a belief in our own eternity. We have to act as if we're living forever. In the time of Adam HaRishon, that was the intention. The intention was that there would be a degree of eternity. And he could make long-term plans, and he was there to stay. So anything that he did was not in conflict with any kind of belief. His belief was of one of eternity, and his avodah was one of eternity. It's only now that we have this problem where we've got to continue to believe, we've got to continue to act with a measure of eternity. We've got to act as if we're around forever, and yet we've got to know that time runs out. We're not here forever. Those are two of the differences, of the personal differences, of before the chet and after the chet. The differences in the chetza, and the differences in the objects around us, that we know the world is different to what it was. What it's important to feel is the difference in ourselves, the subjective differences. How we would be different if we were living before the chet, or if we were to what we are living now after the chet. All these complexes and all these tensions are creations of the chet, are creations and results of that first miscalculation of Odom HaRishon. That gives us a little bit of a clearer understanding into the idea that we developed or began to develop last night. Last night we learned a very short Rashi. Rashi dealt with the birth of Noach, where the Torah says, "Vayechi Lemech shtayim u'shmoinim shono me'ash shono," and Lemech lived 182 years. "Vayelid bein," and he gave birth to a son. The first time the Torah uses that phrase, and he gave birth to a son. Up till now, the Torah said, "Vayelid es so and so," and he gave birth or caused birth to be given to name of the person given. Here it doesn't. Here it says, "Vayelid bein," he gave birth to a son. "Vayikro shmoy Noach," and he called him Noach. Why is it put in that particular way, where it says "Vayelid bein" first? It says Rashi, "Shemimenu nivne ha'olam," because this son, mimenu, from him, the son was Noach, and from Noach, nivne ha'olam, the world was built. The world was destroyed at the time of the flood, and from Noach, the whole world was rebuilt. And that's why it says Vayelid Bein, Bein meaning not only a son, but Bein in its secondary meaning of a builder, a boine. Vayelid Bein, and Lemech gave birth to the man who was the future builder of civilization. And his name was Noach. And we asked last night, but that's not fair. Because if there's anybody deserving of the name of the builder of civilization, that's Odom HaRishon, the first man. It's true that we're all descended from Noach. But Noach himself was descended from Adam. So if we go right back to the source, who is the father of civilization? The father of civilization is Adam. And in that very phrase, we begin to see the answer. Adam was the father of civilization, but not the son. In fact, Adam is the only human being, we said last night, in the history of civilization, who wasn't a son. Never. There isn't another human being who wasn't a son, a bein. What Rashi is telling us is that he wasn't a bein and he wasn't a boine. He wasn't a son, nor was he a builder. The builder of civilization was Noach, not Adam. Adam's function was different. Adam's function was not to build. Adam's function was different. Why? What was Adam's function? Adam was brought into this world when the world was complete. How complete? Absolutely complete. It had been designed by the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. It had been created by the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, and it was lacking nothing except the input that Adam had to put into it. Adam had to introduce Kedusha, Adam had to bring Torah and mitzvahs into the world, But the world was formed as a complete receptacle, ready and able to receive the Torah that Adam would introduce into it. There was nothing at all lacking in the world. There was no need for any building. Everything was complete. Not so Noach. Noach started with a massive empty plot. A devastated, desolate world with nothing in it. And he had to start from scratch. He had to start building and structuring and constructing. That was the midah of Noach. That was the characteristic and that which was required for Noach to do that which was expected of him. Unlike Adam. Now, a builder doesn't start from scratch, nor does he work with perfect materials. Adam had perfect materials. He didn't start from scratch. It's true. He had a finished article. And the article was perfect and complete. So he wasn't a builder. There was nothing to build. But a builder can't start from scratch. He also has to have a plot of ground on which to build. He has to have earth, he has to have sand to make his bricks, to make his cement, to make his materials. He needs the wood. He needs raw materials and he needs a place. Without that he cannot build. A builder is not a creator. He doesn't make the land, he doesn't make the wood. He forms it, he puts it together into a structure. And the ultimate quality of his building is going to be limited to a degree by two factors. The quality of the raw material, including the site, there's nothing he can do to change that. And his own resourcefulness. To what extent he can overcome the limitations of the raw materials and of the site. To what extent he can be resourceful, to what extent he can adapt, and to what extent he can make do with what he's got. That's the boyne, that's the builder.
And that's the middle of the son as well. A child doesn't start off from scratch. Each time a new generation is born, they don't start off from scratch. They start with a Yerusha, they start with an inheritance, both in subject and in object. They inherit certain qualities and characteristics from their parents, and they inherit the material on which they're going to work. They inherit their environment, they inherit their family, they inherit their place of living. That's where they start off. They don't start off with a clean slate. And if a child, chas v'sholem, is born into a family with a bad reputation, the child starts off with a disadvantage and there's nothing that can be done about it. It's just a sad fact of life. And if a child is born into a family held in high esteem, then it's that child's good fortune. He starts off a step ahead. That's just a fortunate fact of life. The children do not start off, a baby does not start off with a clean slate. A baby starts off as a boine. He starts off as a builder. He has his plot and he has his raw materials. And with that he's got to work. And what he makes of it is going to depend on his resourcefulness, on his skills, on the education he acquires, on the way he's brought up. That will determine what he makes from his plot and from his raw materials. But he can't change the plot. That's the plot he's allocated. So he's a boine, he's a builder. A bein and a boine, we have the same concept. That being the case, the boine, the builder, has a very interesting challenge. The more the material that he works with is rough and unrefined, the greater the skill of the builder that is required. If one takes a prime site overlooking the ocean on the one side and with the mountains on the other side, and it's beautiful and it's flat, and the ground is solid, not rocky but not soft, one doesn't, and one has a good architect who drew up good plans, one doesn't need a particularly good builder to make something of it. The plans are there. The plot is good. The land is good. The raw materials he's given are good. How much of a mess can he make of such a plot? But you take a bad plot with no view and with no sight, rocky, difficult to build on. There you need a skilled boyne. There you need a builder who can take something with such disadvantages and work on it and develop those disadvantages, and out of those very disadvantages to build a structure of glory, to build something very beautiful. Now, I mentioned last night a piece of Derech Hashem which I can now do inside with you. V'ulam me'oimek atzas chochmosos is the Derech Hashem in Perek Daled. However, it's been part of the depth of Hashem's wisdom לסדר הדבורים באופן, to order the world in such a way, שאף בהיוס האודם שקוע בחומר בהכרח, that even though a man finds himself absolutely almost drowning in material, in matter, by force, that's where he is. This spirit, this noble, fine neshama, comes down into this world and finds itself virtually drowning in materialism. Yuchal, it is able, that soul, that man can, he has the ability. Mitoich ha-chomer atzmoi, from the very matter in which he finds himself. Ve-ho-esek ha-gufoni, and through his material activities. La-sig es ha-shlimus, va-ha-is-alus, el-ha-zoich ve-el-ha-maila. To achieve perfection and elevation to purity and to high stature. Out of the very raw material in which he finds himself sunk, he can build for himself qualities which would otherwise not be possible. The adarabo hashpolosoi tiye hagbohosoi, and on the contrary, his lowliness becomes the source and the cause of his elevation. Umisham yikne yekaru chavoyed v'chavoyed she'en kamoihem, and there he can acquire for himself honor and glory such as is not to be compared with anything else. B'heyoyso hoifech es hachoshech l'oir, when he turns this darkness into light. That's the skill that the human being has in potential, to be able to take rough material, to be able to take matter totally unpolished, totally unrefined, and out of that to build that into something special, to build that into something exalted and into something elevated. That is the function of the boine. That is the function of the builder. And it is here that we differ in our function from that which was expected of Odom before the Chet. Odom did not have to build. He did not find himself immersed in murky materialism. He found himself in Gan Eden. All he had to do, it was the closest that could be in the physical world to a spiritual existence. It was just one step away from pure spirituality. Gan Eden. All he had to do was to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam and to keep the mitzvahs. There was nothing else he had to do. He needed no other involvement in the semi-material world in which he found himself. And there was no building necessary. He didn't have to take the raw material and change it. All he had to do was to bring the Torah and infuse it into the world around him. But our world isn't even ready for that. Before we can even do that, we have a job of building to do. We have to create the structures which are ready to receive the Torah before we can even inject the Torah in. Now I want to take it briefly on two levels. Firstly, there's the level of the individual himself. The individual is referred to often as an olam katan, as a little world all on its own. Within each individual, there are all the forces that there are in the big wide world outside. We contain it all within ourselves. What is our function and what is our job? To bring Torah into ourselves, yes. To take the Torah and to inject it into ourselves, to infuse that into ourselves too. But we have the same problem. We've got to do some building first. If you've got the raw material, you can't bring the furniture in. You've got to build the house first. And the house has to be suited to the people who are going to live in it. It has to be designed with that in mind. And so there is the building of the individual which has to take place as a precondition even for the introduction of Torah. Taking the human being, who are we and what are we? Matter. That same murky matter which the Derech Hashem talks about as being this world in which we find ourselves, he also refers to as being the human beings into which this soul is placed. A beautiful soul comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam and the Shomer, fine, spiritual, noble, perfect, and it's placed in an animal body, in a body that has a system of operating, a system of passions and cravings which is totally foreign to the neshama. Everything the body enjoys doing, the neshama doesn't enjoy doing. Everything the body needs and wants, the neshama has no interest in, and vice versa. And the Ribbono Shel Olam throws these two together. And what is our job? What does the neshama have to do? Just to push Torah into it isn't going to help very much. The first thing is to take this raw material, soul, body, and to work it. and to refine it, to polish it, to structure. There has to be an act of binyan. If we were before the sin, we would have an easy task, relatively speaking. If we were before the chet of Adam, the human being as he is created would be close to perfection. And we could start with our spirituality and with our Torah and with our higher achievements immediately. But we're not. We're born with raw material. And we're given the skills to build. And our first requirement is to build ourselves. That has to be number one. To build character. To build strength of character. To build refinement. To build nobility. To build derech eretz. Just to be the kind of objects that are fit to receive the Torah. That are fit to absorb Torah. That can hold Torah. Otherwise we're going to put Torah in one end. And it's going to come out the other end. And the human being is going to remain just as empty as he ever was. A kli has to be able to contain that which you're putting into it. Some kelim can contain potatoes. But if you put beans into them, the beans will fall out of the holes. The holes are not so big that potatoes fall out. But they're too big to contain beans. There are some kelim which can contain beans, but they cannot contain peas. There are other kelim which can contain beans and they can contain peas, but they cannot contain water, they cannot contain liquids. And there's some kelim which can even contain a liquid. But you've got to be careful that the thing that you're putting into the utensil, that the utensil is able to contain that particular substance. And so it's all very well putting Torah into ourselves, but we have to first make sure that the structure is capable of containing that Torah. There has to be an act of binyan first. First we must build. First we must develop ourselves to the point where we can handle that. That's the first stage.
And parallelly, there is the question also of building the world around us. That's a little bit of a harder task. That means the world around us we also can't accept as being perfect and as being ready and one can just introduce Torah. It doesn't work like that. There has certain preparedness. It has to be made ready for that. That's not the subject of the shiur tonight, to work on the methods and the means of preparing the world around us in a general sense. But in a specific sense, that's quite easy to figure out, whether it's our own families, our own homes, our own Beis HaMedrash, our own communities, to make sure that the environment in which we're operating is one which is not hostile to Torah. To make sure that the environment in which we're operating is one which is accepting of spirituality, is one which is accepting of Torah. That's the binyan which has to take place. And only then can the Torah really be injected in. And unfortunately we live in a time where shortcuts are sought and instant solutions are sought. Where we like to see results immediately. And the binyan is the area which perhaps is suffering more than anything else. The area of laying the foundations, of preparing the ground, laying the foundations, building it up, putting down the floor, getting the first floor well structured, well established before the second floor is put on top. We like to jump high quickly. We like to see quick results. And it doesn't work. If you pour water into a kli which has holes in the bottom, it's true that if you pour the water in faster than the water goes out at the bottom, you'll be able to fill the kli up. But when you come back in a few minutes' time, there'll be nothing left. It's all gone. And so you say, but first you've got to repair the utensil. You've got to put work into the utensil. And then someone will tell you, but that's a waste of time. To start fixing. I'm not here to fix kelim. I'm here to fill them with water. Of course it's a waste of time if one sees that as an end in itself. But if one understands that there cannot be ultimate development without laying the foundations, that there cannot be the development of greatness and the development of spirituality if the kli isn't there, if the binyan hasn't taken place, if one doesn't understand that, then nothing's going to develop. It was necessary for Noach to precede Avraham Avinu. Avraham was the one who introduced spirituality or reintroduced spirituality into the new world, into the post-flood world. But before that could be done, there had to be a world. A world had to be built, it had to be structured, there had to be a place to live, there had to be things functioning, there had to be what to eat. That was the work of Noach, to lay those foundations and to get them structured. This achar ha-levovu, this achar ha-maisim, achar ha-pulis, nimshochim ha-levovu, But the chinuch says that the heart follows and the mind follows the actions. That's true. And if we see our actions as isolated, then this concept is going to give us difficulties and problems. If we see our acts of earning a living just as an act of earning a living, that's what it is, then of course we're going to be led to a feeling of koichi v'oitzem yodi. If we are successful, we are going to feel, this is my work, it's my success, I did it. It is an activity which is going to be counter to the feeling of bitochen which we have to develop within ourselves. But if we see that activity not as earning a living, we see that activity as part of the business of binyan, really we shouldn't have to do that. But we've got raw material that needs to be structured, it needs to be built, we need to have what to live on. We need to make a contribution to our society, we need to make a contribution to our families, to ourselves. Imein kemach ein Torah, we have to supply also the wherewithal with which to learn and with which to grow. If we see that as laying foundations, as building the kli, which is afterwards going to be used to develop the Torah, then that action is not counter to the feeling we have to develop. Then the action becomes parallel again. We are being mesakein the chet, we are fixing that which went wrong as a result of the chet of Odom HaRishon. And likewise with our feeling, with our acting as though we're eternal. If we're acting as though we're eternal, not because we believe we're eternal. We're acting as though we're eternal because we know that if we don't, nothing will get done. If we don't make long-term plans, there won't be medium-term plans. And if there won't be medium-term plans, there won't be short-term plans. And if there won't be short-term plans, there'll be nothing. So we realize that the world is in such a situation. It's true, we're not eternal. That's a sad fact of life. But that can't be a cause for us sitting around and not doing anything. And we realize there has to be binyan. The world has to be molded, the world has to be developed, the world has to be structured. And if I can only take it to a certain point, and I will then have to leave others to take it further, good, then that's what I have to do. That's part of the art and the skills of binyan. One cannot refuse to start a building because it's going to take longer to build than the lifetime of the builder. Sometimes there's a project which has to be started. A city has to be built. Major dams have to be built. And perhaps the most experienced person to build it is a man who's in his 60s or 70s or 80s, and it's going to take 40 or 50 years to finish. Does that mean to say, sorry, I can't take it on? That's binyan. Binyan means you have to plant, you have to invest, you have to develop, you have to build. And if we see what we're doing not as an affirmation of our own eternity, but an affirmation of the eternity of Klal Yisrael, that there will always be a Jewish people and I have to build for the future of the Jewish people, not only for my own future, then my activity of building is not contrary to my feeling of bitochen and to my feeling of my own transience. On the contrary, it reinforces the understanding of my own frailty, that it reinforces my belief in the eternity of the Ribbono Shel Olam and of the Torah and of Klal Yisrael. It's with that knowledge that we have to embark on all sorts of long-term plans, irrespective of what our short-term feelings are and might be. And as I said during Sukkot, it applies particularly to people living in this country. At this stage, this is one of the insecure spots of the world. But things change. At times when people feel insecure in different parts of the world. At the moment, people feel insecure in South Africa, and it's understandable that they do. That's normal, that's natural. One has to learn to live with it. But the important thing is one has to learn to build with it. And never should one allow oneself to go through a stage where a feeling of insecurity freezes one into inactivity. That cannot be. Irrespective of the insecurity is normal. Sukkot, we were there for only 7 days. But we settled in. Life, we're here for only 70 years, 100 years, 120 years, whatever it is. It's short term. But we settle down pretty well. We live as if we're here forever. It doesn't bother us. We're not plagued by the insecurities caused by the short-term nature of our lives. We've learned to live with it very well, and we plan long-term. So it has to be in everything that we do. We have to have that ability to understand the needs of binyan, the needs of laying down foundations for long-term results. Not only long-term results in ourselves, but also long-term results in others. There's a value in that binyan. There's a meaning in that binyan, and there's a long-term benefit in every structure which results from our acts of building.